Eurydice by Sarah Rule. First movement, scene one. A young man, Orpheus, and a young woman, Eurydice. They wear swimming outfits from the 1950s. Orpheus makes a sweeping gesture with his arm.
Hi, I'm Ava.
I'm Neve.
And I'm Brayden.
And this is Return to Camp Half-Blood, the English class that you always wanted.
Where we analyze the Percy Jackson and Heroes of Olympus books through a new theme every week.
Slay.
Yes.
Ava, Neve, how are we?
Okay. I did accidentally take a 2.5 hour nap on my couch this afternoon. Because I was going to do so many things. But my roommate is at work. And I was like, I'm just going to, like, this is like 5:30 PM. I'm like, I'm going to watch like one episode of The Ultimatum, which I'm now watching, but not with my roommate, cause we tried to watch it and she hates it. She's like, these people are too stupid. I really can't do it. And I was like, I'll just watch one episode. And I was like, I'm a little tired. I was like, whatever. I'll probably just rest my eyes for like 20 minutes. Absolutely not. So I'm a little dazed, but okay. In general, I'm chilling. The weather's getting colder. Leaves are falling. Very nice. Yeah, just sleepy. How are you, Neve?
I'm good. It was actually quite a good day today. I had a very peaceful and normal day at both of my jobs, which was very nice. I had a very normal couple hours online to do my little social media job. And people there have been a little rude to me recently. So I'm glad that they were normal. It's just like, you know, I might be reading it wrong because like things over email and Slack message are always harder to decode if they're like actually being rude, but yeah, that was nice. And then I worked a double and I got let out of it early and it was lovely. And it was also like, I was like, oh my God, I can't fucking believe I'm working this double. That's so upsetting. Cause it was supposed to be like 12 hours long, but, luckily it was only nine. I was kind of like getting upset about it. But then for some reason, when I got there, as people started like coming in for like the lunch shift and stuff, it was like every person that I've enjoyed working with so far was like scheduled for this Wednesday. I was like, this is so great. Okay. This makes this double better. But for some reason. And then when like the dinner shift came in, I was like, is it going to be anyone weird? And then it wasn't, it was just more people that I like working with. And I was like, love. And then I got to go early. So that was fun. And they made really good fish for dinner in our break room. Guys, I work at such a fancy place. It's really like crazy. They like make us like a hot meal every day for our breaks. I don't understand how they afford it, quite frankly, because there's a lot of people who work there and they're like also paying us to be there. I guess they're not paying us to eat though. We do have to clock out for our breaks. But yeah, pretty good day. A little tired. And I don't really get to sleep in tomorrow, so that's upsetting. But Friday I do, so it's okay. How are you, Brayden?
Oh, you know, I'm a little run down. I'm working too much. My third job, my money, extra money job, my non-career job, is, I think, has proven to be too much for what I'm doing. And I'm in the market for a replacement because while I enjoy it a lot, the hours of working in a nightclub are not sustainable with the hours of working theater. One, they overlap a lot, so it's a schedule-y problem. And I'm tired. I'm very tired. I'm very exhausted. I cannot do days where I'm working from 9:30 in the morning until 2 a.m.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I'm struggling because of that, but I'm happy to be here because this is always one of the joys of my week. And I actually feel like I'm doing something important when I do this podcast, which is silly, but it's like
Literally, I'm so stunned every single time Brayden's like, so here's the numbers. Like, hi, everyone.
Damn. I know, right?
It's literally crazy to me that this is not just like a little book club that we're having on our own. Like,
I know. It feels like it.
Crazy.
I think what I mean to say is like, it's nice to feel like an important part of a project.
Mm.
I'm just like entering the like early careers world where it's like, it's a lot of work. But it also feels like if you weren't there, the work would still get done.
Yeah.
As that's just kind of the reality of like entering the workforce.
Yeah.
And entry level jobs. But it's like where you don't really feel like you're doing anything that's like needs to be done that someone else couldn't do. But so it's nice to be doing something like this where like I actually feel like I'm.
Yeah.
My presence is required.
I agree.
I feel appreciated places, but like, like I'm not ragging on my other jobs, but that's just the reality of some of my other jobs is just like, this is our thing. Like, and it's nice that it's our thing. Oh. And so that's nice. It's nice to have ownership over something.
So sweet. That was so sweetie.
Well, welcome back to Return to Camp Half-Blood. This week we're doing something a little different.
We're spicing it up, guys.
A little speechy.
A little speechy?
A little speechy, spicy meatball.
Right. No, of course. For sure.
Do people know that video, right?
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't?
I thought you were making it up.
No. Oh my God, Ava, you'll love it.
No, I'm certain. It feels like something I will really enjoy.
So just after this video or after this podcast episode, please go ahead for your sake and look up a spicy spicy meatball.
I got you.
And then get back to me later.
Right.
We're talking about plays, one play in particular.
I was like, plural.
It's Eurydice by Sarah Rule, originally directed by Mary Zimmerman.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I love Mary Zimmerman. What the fuck?
Me too. Pro Mary Zimmerman podcast. I hope she hasn't done anything. Bad. I don't know her like that well. Like
I don't either. And also, like, I can't really imagine that. Like, I don't know. I don't see her wreaking any kind of havoc, you know. But if she has, excuse me.
Havoc.
It was originally written in 2003.
All right.
Originally written sounds like it was written again, but no, it was just written. The play was, the publishing day is 2003.
Nice.
So we're kind of treading new waters here because we haven't talked about a play before, but let's kind of approach this a little like we approach the movies because that's kind of what it's standing in for. So like, what are each of our, if we have any history with encountering this play before, share that. And, or just like your impressions of this play, reading it this time generally.
I'm actually quite surprised I have never had to read this play before for any classes or anything. It's funny because this type of episode, like where we tackle a play as opposed to a movie, feels way more like plays are so in our wheelhouse, like as a group of like three people who majored in theater. I'm like, I don't know how the fuck we haven't like gotten here before, but
we were trying to branch out. We were trying to challenge ourselves.
right.
Not being in school, I think,
yeah,
is a big influence on that.
We used to do this on the daily.
Yeah, true. Very true. I know, it was like so refreshing to like read a little classic-y type play. I didn't realize I knew anything about like the content actually of this play in terms of like the text until I got to a part and I was like, I have heard multiple girls do this monologue before.
That is, yep, exactly.
And I was like, oh my God, I know these words. I know, which was a little funny, but really beautifully written. I've read snippets of various Sarah Rule things for various theatery classes and such, but I've never really like dove into her work. And I really enjoy her writing style. I really do. And I think it was, I'm always a little enthusiast about people who modernize, the classic myths. So it was fun. It was fun. My analytical brain is not here today. So instead we have I recently woke up from a 3-hour nap brain, which will be really fun. The thesis being really liked it.
Yeah, that is exactly how I have interacted with this play. The girlies love this monologue. And you know what? Like, it is really, like, it's really good. And I wouldn't say it's like an overdone monologue or anything.
Like, yeah.
Like, anything from this show is like overdone. I think it is just like I have, that was the only context I knew it in, was like hearing people do snippets of it. Either like, I think I also saw somebody in a scene class, like a scene partner duo do it once, but it was in a Zoom acting class. So who knows? Like, honestly, I did not retain much information from any Zoom acting class that I ever took, but I'm pretty sure I saw someone do something from it. But I had never read it in full. And it's really cool, but I'll wait till we start getting into the plot before I talk about my thoughts.
I read this play in high school. I went to performing arts high school.
Mm-hmm.
I did an acting class where we worked with this play. That was fun. It was weird because I transferred into this performing arts school my sophomore year of high school. Most people have been going there since seventh grade. So they had done this play in middle school. Yes. It was a middle school and high school. So the middle school had done this play a couple years earlier when the people in my grade were in eighth grade. So they had all been the lead, or maybe it was seventh grade, but they'd all been in... not all of them, but
yeah,
their grades had done Eurydice. So it was weird because that's why they did in the acting class to like reapproach something they worked on. But like I hadn't been there. So it was kind of weird because of that. But I really enjoy this play. That's why I wanted to go back to it, because I really like Sarah Rule's writing. I think she's very, very poetic in the way she writes, in a way that I really appreciate. I like that this play approaches like a childlike poetry, but like intentionally. It's not like it's written for young audiences. They're playing with childhood and aging and like the adolescence that you approach as you age and get nearer to death. Anyways, but there's an intentionality with it, so that remains still poetic, and it doesn't read like children's theater while it is really playing with a lot of childlike language and impression.
I agree with that.
So let's read through the Wikipedia summary and talk about it as we go along, as we do. So this play consists of three movements divided into numerous scenes, 7 in the first movement, 20 in the second movement, and 3 in the third movement. The play begins with Eurydice and Orpheus, two young lovers who are about to get married. That's kind of how the myth always starts.
Mm-hmm.
In the underworld, Eurydice's dead father has managed to preserve his memory and his ability to read and write, and tries to send her letters. During the wedding, Eurydice goes outside to get a drink of water, and she meets a man, the nasty, interesting man, who is what the character is called in the script.
That was just Brandon's opinion.
Who tells her he has a letter from her father. Eurydice decides to go to his apartment to retrieve the letter, but as she leaves his apartment after resisting the man's attempt to seduce her, she trips and falls to her death on the stairs.
Indeed.
What do we think about this departure from the myth?
I mean, I thought it was really interesting. And I think, like, she obviously has very significant grounds to stand on, because I think, like, the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice is, I don't want to be like, it's not necessarily event-based, but it feels like more character-centric than, like, event-centric. Like, it's not like she's trying to reinvent, like, the fall of Troy, which is more event-centric than character-centric. So I thought it was really cool, given that, like, basis, to like take this relationship, fuck with it, and like put these characters in like a world that, like, at least in mainstream theater, I feel like hasn't been explored. Yeah, and I feel like it was a smart choice to reinvent this myth because of those things. Yeah, I do think it really made sense.
I really like the changing of the beginning of this play, that it feels like the play is called Eurydice, and it, from the get-go, feels like her play, not Orpheus and Eurydice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Making her death be more important, you know? Like, yeah. There is a plot line to how she died, and, like, there is in the myth, but in the, like, original myth, like, the gods are like, Orpheus is too good at music, therefore Snake, some, it's like weird.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
there's also a lot of retellings of it, but, like, her dying is never about her, and this it is.
Yeah,
so yeah, yay for girl bosses dying,
right?
But it's on their own terms.
Yeah, on their own terms. Exactly. And I think that, like, when I, like, compare it to, like Hadestown has just been on the brain a lot recently, because they're doing the, whenever, I love Jordan Fischer, but when he's brought onto a project, I'm like, they're closing in the next 3 months. I'm like, this
that's
is
when you know
effort. Like, when you bring Jordan Fischer onto the project, you are literally hoping and praying that it brings the crowds in. And it will, because he's amazing. Right. Like, he'll do really well at it, but, like, I don't know. He,
no, but that's when you know.
Dear Evan Hansen, like, right before it closed to.
Yeah.
He is, like, a Hail Mary stunt cast. So that's been on the brain a lot recently. And just, like, thinking about the intentionality of the, like, death moment of this myth. And that, like, this, because the Hadestown retelling of it is, like, almost like she was tricked, and it's like similar in this, like,
yeah, that's that very similar to this, yeah,
something else that, like, is trying to hurt her and not just like of Orpheus's doing, which I think is interesting. So I liked it. It was good change.
At the beginning of the second movement, there is no set change, but the movement to the underworld is marked by the entrance of the stones. Little stone, big stone, and loud stone, who serve as a chorus.
Obsessed with loud stone. Obsessed with loud stone. Because where the fuck did the pattern go? Also, I love the idea that a stone is loud.
I love the stones.
The stones are everything. They're stones. The stones are
art. So us.
The three of us.
Literally.
Little stone, big stone, and loud stone. Let us know in the comments who's who.
Which one of us is which.
Yeah, they're so silly. I love, they act as the Greek chorus. And I think it's important that they that Sarah Rule maintains that like concept within her focus on a Greek play, or a modern version of a Greek play. But I like that they're just like rude. They just like, they just be talking shit. They are like the Muppets, Waldorf and Statler.
They oh, of are. Course. They so but
the
are.
The thing about Greek choruses is chori?
Cool.
Anyways. is that they're always fucking rude. But like, that's you true. Just like, in traditional Greek plays, you know, the language is so
like
different. Flower, yeah, from ours that like you don't necessarily notice that they're normally talking shit throughout the entire performance about what's happening on stage, and like their whole job actually is to like talk shit to the audience about what's happening and be like, shit's crazy, right? That's really crazy. But like, this is just so forward facing with that, because sometimes I feel like when like people think of Greek dramas, they're like, the chorus is dramatic and scary and like trying like, to
that's
like,
stupid tell you no something. They're just bitchy.
They're just bitchy. They're just talking
shit. And we love happening. That.
Yeah.
Eurydice enters the underworld through an elevator. Inside, which it is raining. Upon an incredible image.
Incredible.
Look up, if nothing else, just set designs for like any production of this to see this elevator design is always incredible.
So cool.
Upon arrival, she meets her father, who tries to reteach Eurydice about her past, since she has lost her memory after being dipped in the river Lethe. The stones try unsuccessfully to stop them, because the dead are not allowed to remember their past or speak in human language. Rooms are also not allowed in the underworld, but Eurydice's father creates one for her out of pieces of string. He gradually reteaches her human language and her past. While the father is away at work, the lord of the underworld enters as a child riding a tricycle. And sorry, a fly flew right up my face.
There has been one fly in our home for the past like 3 days that we cannot kill. It's actually embarrassing how like I cannot kill this fly, but he's so slow moving. He's gone now. So we'll just let him exist for a while longer.
The lord of the underworld enters as a child riding a tricycle and attempts to seduce Eurydice, but fails.
Yeah, that was creepy.
This was crazy.
He's like, I have a skill of
the play that I did not like know. So
yeah. He was like, I got a big penthouse.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
And a nice little red tricycle.
Aren't
really,
you impressed?
What the fuck? Clash of context AF.
He said, let's ride.
Please.
Bitches know they can't catch me. Boom, boom.
Exactly.
Vroom.
We don't talk enough about how silly that song is. That song is called Vroom Vroom.
It is.
Yeah.
And people love it. I don't think
love it.
Yeah, it's good. I don't like love it.
What's the Barbie one? How does that one go? That
Speed Drive.
Speed Drive. That, why so many songs about a car?
I did like that one though.
No, I love Speed Drive. I still listen to it.
Yeah, like I would listen to that one.
I also listen to it. I just couldn't think of the name at the moment.
And Man I Am. Let's talk about Man I Am.
Let's talk about Man I Am. That one goes
so
hard.
Fucking good.
Anyways, we're off topic, but I agree completely with that. It went off, and for what reason?
Meanwhile, in the land of the living, Orpheus writes a letter to Eurydice, which her father delivers and reads to her. Orpheus also sends her a copy of the complete works of Shakespeare by attaching it to a piece of string, and Eurydice's father reads to her from King Lear. Orpheus sends another letter and then resolves to go to the underworld himself to find her.
The King Lear bit was like, I was like, you're being obvious, but it's still fucking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I ate it up. And then the plate too. Like, I don't even. Like, it was so sad. And like, that's how she's learning to like it, because it's a role reversal. Like, it's kind of like instead of Cordelia trying to like kind of like teach Lear how to like be a fucking person, it's like the opposite. And it's like they're giving back to each.
It is that whole thing of like they're kind of re-experiencing their life in that like a father teaches his daughter how to read and how to be a person and helps her learn and grow. And once Eurydice is a full grown person, you start to lose your parents a little. Yeah. It's a real heavy show.
It really is.
Yeah.
But in a real silly way.
Yeah. There are some good quips.
Especially Loudstone.
Fuck yeah.
Loudstone's stay killing it.
Loudstone said, I'ma be heard.
I'm a Loudstone stan.
In the third movement, Orpheus arrives at the gates of the underworld, singing a song so powerful it makes the stones weep. The lord of the underworld tells him that he may take Eurydice back, but only if he does not turn around to look at her. I wonder what's going to happen.
Mm.
Eurydice is then faced with the decision to either stay with her father or go back to her husband. At her father's insistence, she follows Orpheus. But as she catches up to him, she calls out his name and he turns to look at her, causing her to die a second death. Meanwhile, her father has decided he wants to forget everything and dips himself into the river again. When Eurydice returns, her father is lying silent on the ground, having lost all of his language and memory forever.
Yeah. Can we also briefly talk about how refreshing it is to get an adaptation of a Greek myth that doesn't go all vile with parent-child relationships? Like, it was very refreshing. Like, the way... I don't know.
I'm looking at you, Oedipus.
I'm looking at you, Oedipus.
Why the fuck did you do that? Why the fuck did you do that, Oedipus?
Always looking at Oedipus.
It's Oedipus, and it's the fact that, like, well, there's Mary Zimmerman again. She directed Metamorphoses. Or no, she wrote whatever. Like, was so good.
Both?
I think it was both, yeah. But then it's like the vile myth of Mira, and I literally played her in high school and I like wanted to throw up all the time everywhere. But
everywhere.
And the fact that one of the lines, I can't remember the specifics because I'm sleepy, but it was like the first, like a marriage is like negating then the marriage of like the father and the daughter or whatever. And I was like, is this going to be weird? Is this going to be gross? Is this going to be... And then it wasn't. It was literally just about like familial relationships and like that they can be good. And I was like, okay, refreshing take, Greek mythology.
A refreshing positive portrayal of parents in Greek mythology. Sally Jackson Core.
Sally Jackson Core. No, so true. So true. Yeah, I loved it.
As Eurydice mourns her father, the lord of the underworld returns, having grown from a child to superhuman height. He orders her to be his bride. Eurydice pens a letter to Orpheus and his next wife, then immerses herself in the river and lies down in forgetfulness. Finally, Orpheus too enters from the elevator, having truly died this time. He finds Eurydice's letter to him, but because he has been dipped in the river, he cannot read it. This, at the end of the show, is so depressing.
It's genius, though. Like, so good. Because, like...
That is the end of the play, by the way.
Yeah, that's the end. And I think that it replaces... Okay, so, like, the original myth like Orpheus turning around to like just because he fucked up is like so like deeply tragic as a plot point that like it was such a good choice to have Eurydice like cause that, you know, and like just like make that choice for herself that like she doesn't want to go.
Again, she's less of an object. She's not a MacGuffin. She's actually
and the things that are happening to her by her own decision.
Yeah.
But in true great Greek tragedy fashion, we just have to have one moment that's just like, you know, without any like just truly upsetting. And I was like, and now we have it, you know? Like it wasn't like there was no like interesting change to an original story. It was just like deeply upsetting.
Yeah, but it was cool because it also
I was like that has to happen in every Greek tragedy. That's good. So,
and it's really cool though because she maintains like that like almost like masochistic like purity of like oh so sad, like of tragedy, but leaves room, like sets it up earlier so that like. It leaves room at the end for the audience to be like, but, you know, like the people that used to know each other down there helped each other remember then. Like there is a possibility that like the three of them using whatever collective power they may have could like help each other remember in like all the time they have. So it's like not completely hopeless, but it's still so fucking sad.
Yeah. I agree. Beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This play also just made me think so much about like memory. And I mean, like death. It's a main part of it, but like the way that we view it is so tragic that they don't remember, but like realistically these characters don't feel
but it's not it, but it's not tragic for them because they don't remember. It's the not knowing what you've forgotten. It's very, I don't know that like it was specifically written about Alzheimer's or dementia, but like that is what it's about to me. You can't really write something about memory and not evoke degenerative diseases.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about like death and aging and stuff.
Yeah, but it's like when I first read this play, I had a grandparent that was just starting to kind of go through the, like, it was not really something I was familiar with, but then I've had two of my grandparents pass away in the at the end of high school, and my grandfather had dementia, and this play really brought out the experience of that in that, like, it's so strange because these degenerative diseases put you in a different place and time. Like the loss of memory is like your memory is constantly building. And so what happens when that memory isn't building linearly or is there's destruction non-linearly at the same time? It and this play plays with that, in that like you don't know what you're missing, so it's more sad for the people around you.
Yeah. Although I will say there's an interesting like discussion in this play that is caused just like by some of the characters bringing it upon themselves versus when it was forced on them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like for some reason, Eurydice's father gets out unscathed and like retains some memory and then like chooses to like, it's time to forget it all now. And I think that's just like thinking about like, I don't know. I think that has more commentary on like death.
Yeah. Very good place.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, I can't think about The Good Place for too long. It gets me upset.
The end of that show is crazy.
Oh my God, open mouth. Love it. It's beautiful though. Everyone watch that show. So good. But Yeah, I think it's that, like, that idea of, like, going into the light or, like, being at peace. And I guess they are, but then you, like, see the result of that action, and it's just, you know, complete forgetfulness, which is, like, so interesting to consider, like, because then, like, there are characters like Eurydice originally and Orpheus who, like, it has just happened to, and that feels more like a, like, commentary on that, on, like, the kind of degenerative diseases, but then, like, some people are, you know, bringing it upon themselves. And, like, Eurydice brings it upon herself when at the end of it, of the play as well, which is just so, so interesting.
Yeah.
Yipperuni.
I like that one.
Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any other thoughts? In any other directions?
Not really currently. I just, all the characters have very distinct voices, like, A plus.
Every once in a while, you know,
you're like,
you're like, ah, shit, theater is cool, damn it.
I know, right? I know. You're like, oh, good one.
Literally, like, they got me again.
They got me, yeah.
I wish for once I could read a play and it be like, not like, oh, that was cool. Right.
Love a play.
God damn it.
I literally have so much more. I feel like I entered college as a freshman with, like, very little knowledge of plays, and the ones that I did know of, I was not, like, you know, I was such a musical girly at first.
Yeah.
But I think maturing is liking plays when you're a theater person, honestly.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I really agree. And there's some people who have never matured.
I still love a musical. Okay. Right. Like, still love a little tune and a song and dance. But, like, there, I feel like plays just sometimes have such more capacity to hit so much harder.
Yeah.
And it depends on the musical, but, like, I don't know.
I will say I enjoy a broader range of plays than musicals. My taste in musicals is very specific.
Yeah. Exactly.
But plays, I have such a wider range of things they can be, mm-hmm. and therefore I am more likely to enjoy a play more often because there are certain types of musicals that I will never like
structure.
Yeah.
Or musically.
Also, I feel like there's commercialization of everything in, like, you know, the Broadway theater sense, and, like, what shows get top billing and stuff, but I feel like there have just been more when it comes to, like, things that have made the, like, a Broadway or, like, off-Broadway debuts, like, plays just get a little more leeway to be interesting.
I agree.
Sure.
Then
because they're not going to make any money no matter what.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So they can just be more interesting.
Yeah.
And they also, like, you know, a lot more interesting ideas can get off the ground when they don't have the additional costs of the extra two elements that are included in musicals of music and dance.
Right.
So, well, sometimes they have that.
Sometimes they have, yeah.
Sometimes there are plays with dance.
Sometimes there
are
music.
Plays with music start to blur the lines for me.
Yeah, because, like, then what is a musical? If not play with music.
Loved Cambodian Rock Band. Like, truly, like, one of that was a musical. And it was technically under Signature's no, that was not a Signature. I can't remember. Maybe it was actually.
It was. Like, it was a Signature.
Okay, yeah. That was under Signature season as a play with music. Which, like, I get in a sense that, like, it was not. No, but it was a musical.
No, that was a musical.
Let's talk about it. But it was great. Literally so good. I don't know if there's any recordings of Cambodian Rock Band, but if there is one, everyone should go. It's
a cast recording.
It's amazing. Yeah. Listen to the cast recording at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, even more proof. It's a musical. But, like, I feel like plays with dance kind of bend the vibe a little more. When you're not singing.
What do we want to give an offering for?
Loudstone.
I think think Loudstone needs at least one.
Yeah, for sure.
That Wikipedia summary did not do a good enough job at showing how funny the
stones are.
Yeah. A chorus. Because they really weren't there for the plot. Like, you know, they helped further it a little bit. They cried when Orpheus sang, and like that was important.
Yeah.
But like otherwise, they were just there to be bitchy and be funny.
Loved it. The voice of the people.
The voices of the people, exactly. I'll give mine to Eurydice's father, I think.
Word.
Yeah.
I feel like I should give one for Eurydice.
I agree.
Because no one else has. But because of the ending of the play, I think Eurydice has a lot of catharsis.
That's real.
And it comes to she kind of does embrace the forgetting.
Yes, definitely.
However, Orpheus, I feel like, is the one who gets like fucked the most at the end of the play.
Nice.
And he was a sweet boy. Like he didn't deserve it. Like he wasn't a dick. Like
I love Orpheus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh damn. He really perhaps killed himself. Or time is weird.
Yeah, it could have been years between these things happening, and we just like would have no concept of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I think it would honestly probably maybe be like based on production choices.
Yeah.
Like if they had the actor in different clothes or makeup, like depending, you know, to
try
and show that passive.
The point is he's older. Nope, he's dead.
Or both.
Bofa.
Could be Bofa. But yeah, he was a sweet boy.
Who are we voting off?
The tricycle.
I think the tricycle's funny.
It's a funny choice, but like if someone came up and did that to me and was on a tricycle, it would make it 400 times worse.
Yeah.
So
real.
So that's my reason.
It's also a child.
It's a funny choice.
Mine is the man who pushes her down the stairs.
Yeah. Mine is any asshole who's played Orpheus. Like, if you're like a shit person and you played that sweet boy, you don't deserve to.
Word.
I agree.
I respect your gatekeeping.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because you know there's been at least one.
Gatekeep for good.
Gatekeep for good.
And with that, that's all for this week. Join us next week where we'll be reading The Burning Maze.
Chapters 1 through 4.
Yeah. Correct. Yep.
Make sure to follow us on social media. We're at Return to Camp on every platform that matters. And we also have a coffee account and a Redbubble store and a website, www.returntocamp.com.
Bye.
Bye.
Forget you ever listened to this.
All right.
And then listen again.